You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Imagine how you'd respond if a member of your family or a friend developed a rare cancer, and then another person in your neighborhood developed a similar cancer, and then another and another. At what point would you start to ask whether it was more than a sad coincidence? And how would you investigate? Are there any public organizations you could turn to? 13 children in Florida in a neighborhood called the Acreage did develop brain tumors. And Nation contributor Sharon Lerner tells the story of those children, their parents' struggles, and the investigation into a cancer cluster in the Acreage in the current issue of the Nation. Her article reported in partnership with the Investigative Fund at the Nation Institute and with support from the Gertrude Blumenthal Kaspikar Fund is called How Cancer Came to the Acreage. And I'm very pleased that it brings Sharon Lerner to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, the actual numbers here might confuse people unfamiliar with statistics on how cancer is tracked. 13 kids from 1994 to 2007. How did anybody come to suspect that there might be a problem?
Yeah, it is very, very confusing. So a cluster is an higher than anticipated number of cancer cases, or actually any disease cases in a geographic spot. So what happened in the Acreage is, as you mentioned in the intro, you know, a number of people were diagnosed, and they started realizing that a bunch of people were in their neighborhood were sick.
And these are brain tumors. It's not
right.
They're rare among children, aren't they?
Well, they're rare, period. They're a little bit more common, actually, among children than adults, but they're rare, yeah. And the incidence, the expected incidence, I believe, is one in 40,000. So what they ended up doing was counting up the cases themselves. And it was one mom in particular, this woman named Jen Dunsford, and her son, Garrett, had developed a brain tumor. And in her, after she sort of came out of the intense shock and caretaking of that, she found out that a couple other families and a couple other children in her area were sick. And she ended up doing some of the tallying. She kind of took this suspicion that something was a little bit awry to her son's neurologist. And she said, you know what, there are a bunch of kids, and this seems odd to me. What should I do? And he suggested that she get in touch with the health department. She did. And what they said was, you know, we're going to give you some forms. You share them with folks in the area and basically do your own tally. And so she was sending out these forms with, you know, where do you live, what kind of cancer, if you have cancer in your family, what type. And she sent those into the health department. And it was a long process of tallying. And eventually what they found was that they looked all the way back to, as you said, 1994. The cluster was just in cases between 2005 and 2007. And what they ended up finding was they measured the actual rate of cancer in the area compared to what it was in the rest of the state of Florida. And that's often what they do with a cluster. Either they compare it to the surrounding area or to what you'd expect. And they found that the most pronounced elevation was among girls, and it was 5.5 times what the rate in the rest of Florida. So that's completely confusing, I realize. But
5.5 times is a lot.
It is. It is.
How old were the girls? Well, it was also a boy. How old were the children affected?
Well, they were all sorts of ages. And I should add, actually, before we go on, that also when the health department ended up doing its study, it found that there were elevated rates of all cancers among people of all ages.
So adults as well were affected.
Yeah, but not quite as high as with the brain cancer. But it's worth noting. Anyway, so there was a little girl who died when she was four. Joey Barada, who died, one of the cases was considered pediatric, I believe, because he got cancer when he was younger, but when he died, he was 20. And then there are we'll get to this later, I'm sure, but several of the cases, the legal cases that came out of this, are actually adults who have cancer, brain cancer.
Isn't the Centers for Disease Control responsible for determining whether there is a cancer cluster?
Well,
so is this a national issue, or is this
CDC had a role in this investigation, and they do take a role in cluster investigations sometimes. It's certainly not their sole responsibility, but the question of responsibility is a big one that comes up in this story and in this issue. Who should be looking at this? Ultimately, a lot of these investigations do come back to them. But like in this case, it was the county health department, the state health department, the state Department of Environmental Regulation, a bunch of agencies kind of doing little bits of the investigation.
Not the Environmental Protection Agency, the United States Environmental Protection Agency?
No.
Was there a formal investigation at the county, state, or federal level into what was happening to the children?
There was. And at first, it seemed like there might not be. And actually, the county health commissioner, right after there was, maybe we should even back up and talk about what a cluster investigation involves, because it's really confusing, and to me still, after spending months and months on this. First, it's what we were just discussing, making sure that the rates of cancer are in fact elevated. And that's really a calculation, right? You're looking at the actual rates versus what is expected. And that is hard to do. It's very actually hard to clear that statistical bar and show that that there is a real elevation, because even though even in the cases of a cluster, cancer is really rare. And so to work with small numbers is very difficult. But once you've cleared that bar, the second part of a cluster investigation tends to look at what caused it, right? That's the question. What might have caused this statistical increase, right?
And isn't Pratt & Whitney, the huge defense contractor, the prime suspect behind the cancers in this cluster?
Well, we get ahead of ourselves, but they are one of two companies named in the lawsuits that came out of this cluster investigation. And when you look at the situation there, when you look at it from above, Pratt & Whitney has a huge, and you're right, it's a huge defense contractor. They have more than $10 billion in defense contracts. Very big company. They power the air forces in 22 countries. Very huge company. They have a 7,000-acre campus down there. That work site is separated from this neighborhood by basically a big swamp. It's a nature preserve, but it's kind of, when you look at it from above, it's just like swampy, watery area. So, yes, they are one of two companies that are named in these suits, and they are, by many, suspected of contributing to it.
The acreage is in Palm Beach County, which has a population of 1.3 million. But it sounds, what you're describing, almost rural. Is the green space in the area what drew Pratt & Whitney to the area? The fact that there's so much space, and is that swamp a reason that they would have wanted to be there?
Right. So the area is about 20 miles inland from West Palm Beach. And when Pratt & Whitney moved there in the 50s, definitely part of the reason they seemed to move there was because it was isolated. And at the time, it was surrounded, as I said, by this nature preserve, but also the area where the acreage is now was then just a swamp. And a lot of what they were doing, they make aircraft engines, military airplane engines. A lot of what they were doing was at the time classified.
They still are saying that they can't reveal everything because of national security. But making engines doesn't sound to me to be all that dangerous. Why are levels of radiation so high in the area?
Well, that's the question, right? I mean, we know. So again, the suit that came out of these cancer cases, and there are actually several suits, right? So there are 13 personal injury and wrongful death suits that are representing kids and some adults. And then there are also real estate value suits, which we can come back to those.
We'll get to that.
Yes. And so two companies, we got Pratt & Whitney and also this limestone mining company called Palm Beach Aggregates. And you know, why the radiation was there. So radiation was found in some of the water supplies of the people who got sick, the families who got sick. And there was also some radiation in some of the mining pits left over by the mining company. And you have to remember, down there, the water, there's water everywhere, and it kind of flows in between the residences and in between, as I said, the swampy area. Now, why the radiation was at the Pratt & Whitney site, there are theories, and they come up in this lawsuit. I mean, the company was involved in building a nuclear airplane, what was supposed to be a nuclear airplane, which has since been scrapped, of course. And they also, just in the manufacturing and testing of engines, there is some radioactive byproduct.
The father of Hannah, one of the kids with cancer, told you that about his radiation detection gun belt.
Yeah.
He walks around with a belt that is like a Geiger counter.
Well, his wife told me that story. But yeah, so he is a customs official. And when they lived in the acreage, they have since moved. He stored his belt in the closet at night. And it has one of the things on it is a radiation detector. And it used to go off in the night, and they couldn't figure out why. And eventually they figured out that it was actually beeping when their well recharged, which was frightening to them, you know.
Radioactivity is something that causes alarm even when other pollutants don't. Did news of the contamination get out? And how did the residents respond when they heard about it?
So I should say radiation is not the only problem down there in terms of contamination. And the news about this situation has been, there's been very little discussion of it actually since the lawyers in the case did testing for radiation in their plaintiffs' homes. And in part, there are two reasons. First, it's because the community is really done with this issue. And I feel like we should come back to that point, because there's a lot of dissent within the community about the fact of the cluster, what caused the cluster, to the point where people really don't want to talk about it.
Partly because they're afraid of property values, aren't
yes,
they?
Yes, which their property
they
values
can't sell their
has
homes.
Tanked. Yeah, have tanked, and it's been a very difficult situation. The other part of this, though, is that as these lawsuits have proceeded, and the lawyers that I was just mentioning were doing radiation testing on their plaintiffs' homes, they went to the health department and said, you know, look, we found these elevated rates of radiation. The health department said, bring it to the lawyers. And when I was speaking to the lawyers, they said they were hoping that the health department would actually investigate. But then actually what happened is that the judge in one of the cases gagged the attorneys on both sides of this case. So there is specifically from speaking to the press. So there hasn't been press coverage of this for, you know, a year and a half. And I have to say the gag order made the reporting of the story ridiculous.
It difficult. Made it difficult for you to report it.
Yes.
Vermont Law School professor Stephen Dykus makes the point that if Al-Qaeda deliberately contaminated drinking water, people would be up in arms about terrorism. But we're not hearing that kind of thing here. Is it because of the gag order, or because people in the area don't want to discuss, as you said, because of property values or because of national security concerns?
What he was talking about in that quote, I think, was that – so he's an expert on defense and the environment. He's a legal scholar. And what he was saying is that when it comes to national defense, we tend to let both the government and government contractors off the hook because we think, you know, whatever you need to do to keep us safe, it's okay, right? But what he's saying is that as a consequence of this attitude, which is both among just the general public and within the court system, it's been really hard to prosecute the military and its contractors when it comes to environmental crimes. And so his point, I think, is just that, you know, we tend to think of them as sacrosanct.
My guest is Sharon Lerner. Her article, How Cancer Came to the Acreage, Families in the South Florida Town Point to Two Companies as the Source of the Contamination that Caused Their Children's Disease. It's in the current issue of The Nation. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Sharon Lerner. Her article, How Cancer Came to the Acreage, is in the current issue of The Nation, and it was reported in partnership with the Investigative Fund at The Nation Institute with the support of the Gertrude Blumenthal Kassbecker Fund. We have been talking about the legal aspects of this. What about the human aspects of this? How is this story playing out? Is this caused tension in the area because, on the one hand, you have these families, these concerned families. On the other hand, you have people who are more concerned about their property values?
Exactly. It's been incredibly sad what's happened there in terms of the community. So initially, the cluster declaration, I guess, was in 2010. And from then, the community, a lot of people were just trying to figure out what happened. And not that long after, maybe 8-10 months, the investigation was closed. And this put the residents there in this awfully weird situation where here something, they realized that something happened here, but that they're probably not going to find out what caused it. And so the question is, do you stay? If you leave, you often do so at a real cost because the housing prices, as I said, just tumbled. And
this is at a time when housing prices were
right,
tumbling anyway.
Absolutely. No, but, you know, they fell even more than the rest of the area, surrounding area. And there are folks who just walked away from their homes, just didn't even try to sell them. And on top of this, it was very difficult to get a mortgage in the area because of the cluster for a while. So it was devastating to people in that way. And of course, it's hard to compare that to the kind of devastation the families directly affected were facing. But pretty quickly, within a matter of months, the situation had devolved to the point where there was something of a battle between the two sides. On the one side, the families who were sick and people who felt aligned to them and felt really committed to this idea of solving whatever had gone wrong, health-wise and environmentally. And then these other folks who said, you know, every time you talk about this, you're decreasing my property value. And the strange thing was that this division, it went through some families as well. And, you know, I talked to many women who were in couples who felt that they desperately wanted to leave, but their husbands didn't because they felt that they would be taking this huge financial loss.
Despite the danger, perhaps,
exactly.
of cancer, unless perhaps they didn't have children.
These are people with children as well. And you know, it's interesting because it really struck me. It wasn't just one couple. It was many people I spoke to. And, you know, women who said, I'm staying here only because my husband wants to. And because if I leave, I know I'm leaving alone. And you know, they fought about it a lot. One woman had a bag packed in her bedroom because she just wanted to. She was toying with the idea on a daily basis. And when we had a scientific reviewer who read through the piece before it was published, make sure everything was exactly right, And he scribbled in the margin, he said, you know, and he's been working on these issues for decades, he said, marriages are the single biggest casualty of clusters. And I thought, wow, it's a strange thing.
You mentioned a work by David Rosner and Terry Markowitz, Deceit and Denial, The Deadly Politics of Industrial Pollution. Have companies historically been able to avoid responsibility when they have polluted a residential area?
Well, yes. Yes, in that, so it's incredibly difficult to prove the cause of a cluster, right? There's a study not too long ago that looked at some more than 400 cluster investigations, only in three of them were they able to name a chemical culprit. So it's incredibly difficult. And so if you're the polluter, you can pretty much assume that you're not going to be held accountable, because in the vast majority of cases, you're not.
You report that the EPA was preparing to designate Pratt & Whitney's South Florida facility a Superfund site.
Yeah.
At one point. And have there been concerns about environmental effects going back to the 70s? In fact, Pratt and Whitney commissioned a University of Miami study for themselves.
Yeah. That was that. So Pratt and Whitney had a TCE spill, a chemical organic solvent. And they actually told the health department about that and then commissioned a study to look into the possible effects, and found that that study did find some elevated cancer risks. When it was published, one of the Pratt and Whitney executives dismissed it as full of crap. And then another study came out and said something different. And it's often the case with these things that you have conflicting studies. You have Pratt & Whitney also was the had a similar brain cancer cluster scare, actually, in its in Connecticut. And in that case as well, there are conflicting studies.
Well, the decision to declare it a Superfund site
right.
Was dropped
yeah.
in 1985. That was during the Reagan administration, when the EPA was hit by the Ann Gorsuch scandal involving mishandling of Superfund money, although that was a few years before this. I don't know whether it was William Ruckelshaus or Lee Thomas who were heading the EPA when they decided to drop the case.
Well, this was a process that kind of took some years. It started in the 80s.
There are people right now who want to eliminate the EPA.
Right. Well, you know, it was sort of heartbreaking. There were hundreds. I had hundreds of documents from 1980 between the state and the EPA about how to handle the cleanup of the site. And, you know, from the get-go, Pratt & Whitney was arguing against its being on the list of Superfund sites. And eventually they won. But this is after a really, really long fight that involved many people, many lawyers, many letters petitioning the feds to say it wasn't necessary. And it's really interesting. I mean, so as a result of that, they were supervised. The cleanup was supervised by the state, which many believe to be far a more lenient organization, right? And it also meant that the cleanup and the details of it were in public, right? If you live next to a Superfund site, you know it. When I asked folks, you know, some of the families were affected about if they knew anything about this history, none of them did. And one of them, Becky Samaripa, who lived right on the canal that abutted that was closest to Pratt & Whitney, she said, wow, you know, if I had known this, I never would have moved here.
But she's the one with the husband with
the
Geiger counter
yes.
belt.
Yes.
My guest is Sharon Lerner. Her article, Special Investigation, is How Cancer Came to the Acreage. Families in this South Florida town point to two companies as the source of the contamination that caused their children's disease. It's in the current issue of The Nation. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. At one time, Erin Brockovich's law firm represented some of the affected families, but then her firm left the case. Why?
Well, I'm not 100% sure why. I mean, I can assume, there are always the Florida firm that's now handling the cases was always involved. So at one point it was both of them, which I think was somewhat complicated. But, you know, presumably they left in part because the odds of actually succeeding in a case like this are incredibly slim. It's a huge amount of work. And, you know, when you look at some of the other cases, and there really have only been a few, when you look at what was involved, it's like shooting the moon.
Well, one of the more successful cases was the one childhood cancers in Toms River in Ocean County, New Jersey. Was the evidence just so overwhelming there, or is it just a different situation?
First of all, so I don't know if you've read the amazing book Toms River, which by Dan Fagan, which is an amazing read.
He was on our show.
Yes, good. Anyway, but you know, going through that book, it took years and years and years and millions of dollars. And it should be noted that, you know, in the end, I suppose that could be judged a success in that there was a settlement. There was a financial settlement. But this was with no admission of guilt, right? This is not that they won in court. And no one has won in court. This and so in Toms River and in Woburn, the other big comparable case, which also took many, many years and, you know, and millions of dollars, that also similarly was not ruled in their favor. It was that they got a settlement and an underwhelming settlement.
And even the Love Canal, which was overwhelmingly obvious, that was a complicated case as well.
Yeah.
New York State's Department of Health has an online map of cancer incidents, and we have a link to that map on our show page's website. Have you seen it?
I actually have not seen that map.
Well, because I was wondering if most states prepare maps like that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In Florida, there is an online map as well, and you can access it. But, you know, and I spent a lot of time going through it and calculating rates. And, you know, finally, I spoke to one of the epidemiologists who is close to this case, and he said, oh, that's not even the map you want. The map you want is the pediatric cancer data. And that is not available. It's not widely available. And in fact, even researchers couldn't get their hands on it. So anyway, I haven't seen the New York map.
Do we know why the judge issued that gag order?
Well, he said in his statement that he was concerned that it would bias jury selection. Yeah. But certainly...
I guess we should have gag orders on every murder that we read about in the newspaper,
right.
Every robbery.
Well, you know, I feel like part of the reason I wanted to write about this is not because I felt I could solve the mystery, because I haven't. And, you know, and you can say the same thing also about Toms River and about Woburn, that you can't really definitively within the law be able to say you've solved this. But what you can say is that it's really important that the public understands all the machinations that go into such a case and all the environmental history that can affect the health of a neighborhood.
People have been running for Congress on campaigning to get rid of the EPA. Mm-hmm. Have any of the local members of Congress or the representatives of the state legislature gotten involved in this story?
Well, a little bit. So Charlie Crist, who's up for re-election, was helpful.
He's not up for re-election. He used to be governor, but
right,
now
he's running
against Rick Scott. Now,
yeah, he wants his position
governor.
Back. But he was involved in getting an investigation to happen in the first place. But no, it hasn't been a very political issue.
Even though the Congress, both members of Congress in these districts are Democrats.
Right.
One is Patrick Murphy, a freshman centrist Democrat, and the other is Alcee Hastings, who's been a longtime progressive.
You know, I would say, at the risk of making a joke in poor taste, the issue is basically radioactive. Nobody wants to talk about it. And when I, asked the local council member about it, who represents this district, you know, I said, can I talk to you about the cluster? What cluster? Do you believe there was a cluster? I don't know. Not even people don't even want to address that. You know, the local, very local politician down there said, you know, I won't even utter those words.
Because of property values.
Because it drives the stake into the heart of our community. And I think partly she's talking about property values and she's a former mortgage broker. But I think it's also that people found themselves so at odds with each other. And
But what about Rick Scott, the governor? He used to be a doctor. Yeah. Or he is a doctor.
Is he really? Well, you know, from what I hear from the environmental folks I spoke with down there, the environmental regulatory agencies have all but, you know, shut down. They're no longer issuing fees. I would say he has not been good for environmental regulation down there.
Are there any other areas we should be concerned about? For example, Fresh Kills landfill in Staten Island?
I don't know a lot about Fresh Kills. There are certainly areas where there are other clusters. It's not something that's just in Florida. There is an NRDC report that looked at 13 states, I think, and found 45 clusters. Here in New York, there is up in Endicott, there is this IBM plant where there is TCE, which was linked to various cancers and employees there. It's still being remediated. In the Bronx, there was a case around a landfill, which, you know, but I think the bigger issue here is that to think about the consequences of industry, not just in terms of the moment you're doing them, but this is really confusing, but also in terms of the future. You know, a lot of the, if you look at that landfill case, the dumping that was done in the 60s and 70s and identified in the 80s, and the cancer was kind of tabulated and emerged in the 90s in kids, and the case was settled last year. You know, we're talking about decades and decades. And so when folks dump or when, you know, or their industry, it's not just about whether this industry is affecting a child while you're doing it, but it's also if they're affecting a child decades down the road.
Frances Beinecke, who's president of the NRDC, will be a guest on our show later.
Okay.
I'll bring up some of these issues with her as well. Sharon Lerner's article, which is called How Cancer Came to the Acreage. Families in the South Florida town point to two companies as the source of the contamination that caused their children's disease. It's in the current issue of The Nation and was reported in partnership with the Investigative Fund at The Nation Institute and with support from the Gertrude Blumenthal Kassbecker Fund. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thanks so much for having me.